As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
While everyone else is winding down for Christmas, The Athletic's club podcasts are firing back up over the festive period. Celebrate the return of domestic football. Catch Talk of the Devils, Handbrake Off, The Phil Hay Show, and all your favourite club shows. None of that World Cup nonsense is behind us. All are free to listen to, of course, on Apple, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back. I don't know about you, but after the World Cup final on Sunday, I was exhausted, so I tried to think how the players are feeling. Hopefully, that's a question we can answer on today's episode of Why Always Us. This is your Manchester City podcast from The Athletic. I'm David Mooney. With me is Sam Lee. Hi, Sam.
Hello.
And we're also joined by former City defender Nedim Anua. Hi, Nedim.
Hello, sir.
You can read everything on City and more in The Athletic right now for £1 a month for 6 months. Just go to theathletic.com/ManCityPod to sign up. That's theathletic.com/ManCityPod. I thought the first thing we would talk about, gents, for the start of this week's show is obviously City have got a fair few players returning from the World Cup. Sam, first off, quick word on Julian Alvarez, a World Cup winner, so young.
It's good, isn't he? Good player. He was exactly the type of player Argentina needed as well. Because it was funny, going into the tournament, they had a pretty settled team. And then after that Saudi Arabia defeat, everything just got shook up. And obviously the team at the end looked completely different to the team at the start. But if there's one player in the world who can do everything himself, then it's Messi. But he did need dynamism around him. Someone who can make a run in behind, someone who can make things happen in the box, around the box, who can run off the ball, all that aggression that we've seen from him at City when he's closing people down. The kind of aggression I talked about when he signed. So in the Croatia semi-final, when Messi kind of played him in and he was still in his own half, I was like, he could go all the way here. Because that aggression he's got when he's got a man in front of him and the space behind him, like, he'll just try and take him on. And that's exactly what they needed. Argentina were looking for that dynamism all the way throughout. Like, if you think about the Holland game when they had like wing backs going forward and Montiel scored the first goal and Acuna got the penalty, and they were looking for that, and without Di Maria they really needed that, and Alvarez was kind of the right man in the right place. But I don't think it was a huge shock, because obviously he was going there, everyone knew he was going to be part of the squad, everyone knew he wasn't going to be part of the 11, but he's made an impact at City, he's obviously made an impact at River Plate before that, and he was always going to get opportunities, even if it was, you know, coming on after an hour or whatever. And then he's gone and done it. And yeah, I think Argentina were favourites for a lot of people, or certainly in the mix for a lot of people beforehand. His standing in the squad allowed him opportunities to get in. And then I guess other things like Lautaro Martinez's performances, it all kind of added up to a perfect storm. And, you know, again, there are kind of examples of City getting their business done early and very well. And this is one of them, because if he was still at River Plate now, it'd be a nightmare trying to buy him. But City have already got him locked in. But I suppose the counterbalance to that is they should have signed Enzo Fernandez as well. But there is time for that.
Yeah, Nedim, he really did make an impact on the World Cup. Was it surprising for you, or did you expect that sort of thing from him? Because I just think of the amount of football that he's played over the last 12 months, like that, how he's continue to be at that level?
I guess it was surprising for me, but it's more so just because I hadn't necessarily been watching Argentina to this point. So I didn't necessarily know that he was going to be one of the main people that would be playing. But Sam, in fairness, did know, and he was telling me about that before the tournament itself. So then when I was watching, I was seeing how it all worked. And yeah, he's really good. Like, you know what I mean? He's really, really good. But what I saw with some of my friends, they were shocked when they sort of found out that he even played for City. I was like, yeah, that's him. But yeah, this is him, the World Cup winner. Just in case you didn't know, you know, I don't think many people thought that City's World Cup winner would be coming from somebody who doesn't start week in, week out in the Premier League. But it's not to say that he's not good enough, because we've just seen that he is on that world stage. I think his style of play, his aggression with and without the ball. I think I said at the start of the season when he was at City that it sort of reminded me a bit of like a Tevez. And I think people like him because of that. And I think for the way that he sort of played for Argentina with that, you know, it did give me sort of flashes of that. And obviously the players are different. But that level of intensity, just when they seem to need it the most, you know, if I was defending and he was in my team, you know that if the ball ends up coming to me, that they've had to work hard to get it there because he's been doing everything he's been doing.
Yeah.
Especially in a team where, you know, for as good as Messi is, he's not exactly, he's the one slider that's not up to the maximum is his defensive sort of understanding and pressing. So I think when you have someone like that alongside you, you put the work in, but he sees happy to do it. And he has just as big an influence, even though he's essentially a man down from that standpoint. But yeah, he did. I thought he was exceptional. I think Lautaro Martinez at this point now definitely looked like a number two behind him, which is sort of hard to get your head around because I've got more sort of positive memories of Martinez. But yeah, what a tournament for the guy. And now he walks back into City at some point, once he's done in Buenos Aires with a million people out in the street, but he walked back to City as a world champion. And, you know, if you need a confidence boost, I think this is probably the biggest one available in football, could you say?
Yeah, definitely. Sam, you were in Argentina for a large spell of the tournament. What was it all like?
Well, it was amazing. So I was there for the Australia last 16 game and the Netherlands quarterfinal. And it was great. Like, it was just so many people out on the streets. They all just basically go to the biggest monument in the city to celebrate afterwards, and there's thousands of people. So the Australia game, I remember thinking at the time that I just got the feeling that they regarded it as a game that they were going to win. So, and you know where those you know, as City fans or football fans listening to this, you'll have those games where it's like, okay, this was like a cup competition, but we thought we were going to win that one anyway. Like if you play in Everton at home in the FA Cup, or even if it's like a semi-final at Wembley, but it's Everton or Brighton. Yeah, it's a big win, but it didn't have that tension of a big game. So the celebrations were great. I remember having to ask some people for work what like Messi meant to them, and a girl said, you know, if you ask me, that's why I'm going to cry. And then she did cry. Like it was like all that stuff. It was amazing. And like I went to a Harry Styles concert because I thought, well, why not? Like I can get a ticket for Harry Styles at the Monumental where River Plate play. Like I need to do this. I'm going to do it. People were singing Messi songs like during it. Like it was great. The whole thing. But then when I got back before the semi-final, and then the scenes on the street for when they beat Croatia to reach the final, I was like, that is 10 times as many people as when I was there for Australia. And it was already like impressive and a fantastic experience then. And like, I just wish there was two of me, because I'm delighted to be back home with my family, because I was missing them. They'd already gone on like a family break before I went away, so I hadn't seen them for 2 weeks. So I was looking forward to coming home. But I was like, if you wanted to keep me here, I would also be open to that. And obviously having come back and seen what it was like for Croatia, I just thought, I'd rather have been in Buenos Aires for the final than in the stadium in Qatar. Because it would just knowing that it would be the ultimate, not even night out, but just, I mean, they landed back in Argentina at 3 o'clock this morning their time. And there was thousands of people on the streets leading to the airport. Like, it's just absolutely crazy. And like, I got a really, really good flavour of that. But at the same time, it just multiplied by, I don't know, 100 after I left just for those two biggest games. So
yeah,
it was just like full on World Cup fever. It's always been like that. But when you add it to the fact they've actually got a good team and they went into it with 36 games unbeaten, they won the Copa America and all of this, like it again, I talked about the perfect storm earlier, but this everything kind of come together for the passion that they've got for the national team and actually having a good national team and then winning it, just completely unmanageable.
Were people chatting about Alvarez and stuff as well, or was it just all Messi at that time?
Yeah, of course, because the thing is, and like, this is the same for any kind of sports channel that's like rolling news 24/7, but they were the ones I had on in the hotel, so obviously it was 24/7 Argentina World Cup stuff. Well, obviously, they talked about the other games as well, but then it'll be flicking back. So they'd talk about whatever was going on, and obviously Alvarez was kind of a big part of it. I have to say there was nothing that really stood out to me that was said over there that I heard that I remember thinking, you know, that will stay with me, or I could even use that for work. But at the same time, I was there for kind of two main jobs, which was like a Maradona article and a Messi article. So everything was kind of blinkers were on towards them. But yeah, there was obviously talk about Alvarez. And like, when I spoke to people and said, you know, live in Manchester, this is my job or whatever, they're like, oh yeah, Alvarez, and isn't he so good, and this kind of thing. And obviously he's got that thing which Messi didn't have, or doesn't have, but they don't care now, obviously. But obviously most Argentinians who come through played in Argentina, so they all feel connected to them somehow, even if they'd played for a club they don't support. Obviously Messi didn't have that when he went to Barcelona, and that was the kind of root of so many of his problems in Argentina in terms of his reputation. He was seen as an Argentinian. But obviously Alvarez has come through there, been at River Plate, and yeah, he was a big part of it, because like I said earlier on, he was one of the big difference makers. I mean, they had so many big difference makers, like Rodrigo de Paul was terrible in the group stage, but was really good all the way through after that, and was really good in the final. Enzo Fernandez was fantastic. McAllister was amazing. Like, I don't know, will City sign McAllister next year? I wouldn't be surprised. Like, it could happen. That is, and same with Enzo Fernandez, they both got the ability to do it. But yeah, Alvarez was just kind of one of those more obvious standout players, scoring goals, making things happen. And yeah, he was definitely part of that buzz.
Yeah, when your social media turned up with you at the Harry Styles concert, my partner actually said to me, "What is his life? What is his life?"
That was a good day. I remember thinking that day, fueled by a bit of beer that I couldn't really say no to, I was like, I have got a good life. And to be fair, the next day was rank. Like, the next day was absolutely horrible, as far as, you know, this job goes, which is still, I'm not complaining. But that day, I went to where Maradona, like, was born and raised, basically. And everyone was like, oh, it's really dangerous, be careful. Ended up, you know, watching, like, there's just some Veterans League that were playing. I went over. I was like, oh, all right, lads, what's going on here then? And then just ended up speaking to them. They're like, oh, I have a sip of this. And then just ended up staying and eating chicken off a barbecue and drinking loads of beers. That was the day of the England-Senegal game. And I was like, oh, well, I want to get back for that. But the way the day was going, I couldn't get away. But I was like, I do actually need to get away for this Harry Styles concert. So got to it. And I was like, because I got back afterwards, got a taxi back into the center. And Buenos Aires is mad. Like, it was 1 a.m. and everywhere was busy. And this wasn't like post concert traffic, because the stadium's in a different part. I had to get like a 20-minute taxi downtown. Like, there was queues for ice cream at 1 a.m. Like, I went to a pizza place that was recommended. It was just, I couldn't even get in the door. So I went to another one. Again, like, pizza at 1 a.m. I was just like, what a day this has been. And I just, what a mad city. Like, it is a mad city. It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, there we have it. Meanwhile, Nadim, I don't know if you've seen on Jack Grealish's Instagram, he's loving life in New York right now. Who knew he was such a big fan of Home Alone?
Isn't everyone? No,
I've never seen it.
Beg your pardon?
I've never seen Home Alone.
Do you want to cut that bit out, or are you going to keep saying that over and over?
It's going to stay in.
I only saw it a couple of years ago. I watched it on a flight back. And really? I was like, it's probably, yeah, so I was probably, what, like 30, 31 at the time. And I was like, it's probably about time I saw this film. What else did I watch as well? There was another big Christmas film I hadn't seen.
Oh, Mooney, how old are you?
No.
I'm 35, mate.
No way. I could loosely understand Sam, but you, Mooney, no way.
There's genuinely a list of films that, you know those, oh yeah, you need to see this before you die. There's so many of them that I have not seen.
I've got a few of them, but not Home Alone. Come on. Come on, behave yourself.
Home Alone, yeah, and Die Hard. I had to catch up on them a few years ago.
This like Winter World Cup thing is interesting, because everyone obviously came back at different times, and you know, there's some clubs who had everyone away, some clubs who had nobody away. So in terms of how they'll reintegrate them, it is going to be very, very important, very interesting. I suppose it pays when you've got a good squad and a sort of like an understanding football clubs give you the best chance physically and mentally to be able to come back and what's going to be get involved in what's going to be a very, very tough 5 months, because everything at this point is just, you know, it matters just that little bit more, doesn't it?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Let's talk about the kind of reintegration of these players then, because City have had at least one friendly. I don't know if they've had any more, but they played the 2-0 win over Girona at the CFA. Goals from Kevin De Bruyne and Erling Haaland. They might have had a couple behind closed doors. They might not. I'm not sure. I haven't checked. But this is effectively now a second pre-season. And Nadim, since you're here and you've done a few pre-seasons, I thought I'd I'd find out a little bit more about getting fit for the start of a competitive season. Because players always say that pre-season is hard. So how hard is it? What's it like?
Pre-season, basically the two types of people, they're the ones who get really excited about the pain and the ones that hate the pain. You know, it's not like, is it fun? The only fun that I remember through pre-season was getting a chance to see your teammates again and to be back in that structure. But say like the first couple of weeks of it, when it's fitness based, it's not fun because it's like, it's just exceptionally hard. But I think what's different this time based on the nature of the World Cup is that if you think about the fact that the players finished on November 12th, they wouldn't necessarily just be off for like 3-4 weeks. They'd still be doing stuff to tip them over. And they, you know, they were still technically in a good bit of form, fitness and the like. So there's a chance that for some of them, you won't really lose it because you'll probably get a few days off for a week here, but then you'll be back in training. So it's almost like just trying to maintain whilst also allowing your body the chance to recover. Maybe certain things won't be as high impact as, say, they might be if you came back in a pre-season. But again, like, things are different for different clubs and the managers are different. But for City, because they always have players who are playing international football all the time, you know, the individualized program is probably the most important thing. Because say I was doing something for City in the community last week and there was a special guest and it was like Kevin De Bruyne, and then he was playing in the game the day after. But then this same week, you've got other people who were in New York and you've got somebody who's in Argentina. So you can't say that everyone has to do the same thing at the same time. But they'll know that those people who are away now, they've probably played more games than somebody who was still in Manchester. So again, you don't necessarily need to go through the same sort of processes as those guys did themselves. And there's the emotional element to this as well, because there's some players who arrive back really frustrated. Some will arrive back as world champion. And then others who've been watching the tournament from a distance frustrated that they weren't there. So, you know, the motivational factor, again, for everyone is so, so different. But yes, I think this is a brilliant time for football because you get a chance to see how every team and every club does things, because they do it in a million different ways and nobody actually knows what the best way is. But in time, you'll probably be able to figure out based on how the teams perform when they come back in.
Yeah, Sam, we've talked a lot in the past about you get those games where you go, well, Guardiola could just bring on X or Y or Z. And when like there's the emotional element of wanting to see more game time for, I don't know, Cole Palmer or someone like that. And actually what he's doing is he's balancing the minutes of Ilkay Gundogan and he's balancing the minutes of Kevin De Bruyne and all the key players, Riyad Mahrez, those sorts of players. And, you know, he might bring them on for 10 minutes at the end of the game, but it's about rhythm and getting them in the right place for the games, not next week, not the week after, but for the entire month, the entire season. It's kind of that in the extreme now, I guess.
There's just so many factors to balance out. And I always remember that game at Burnley, because, and this is a kind of wider point on what we know on the outside versus what they know on the inside with all the whether it's data or science or just Guardiola's insight into football or whatever. But it was just coming back off the last international break of last season, the rundown with all the games against Liverpool, Atletico Madrid and all of that. And they played Burnley away first. And Mahrez didn't play, and he hadn't played against Southampton, I think, in the FA Cup before the break. And it was, okay, well, Mahrez is obviously going to be the main guy for the Atletico Madrid game in midweek. But then afterwards, Guardiola was like, well, Algeria didn't qualify for the World Cup, and he was a bit down. Otherwise, he would have played. But I thought, you know, he wasn't in the right frame of mind to play. So now, in terms of whether it's fitness or whatever, now they're all coming back. You think, which players, if any, because it might not be, but which players are most affected? Like, De Bruyne probably had one of the worst tournaments, like in terms of his team's performance and maybe his own compared to expectations, and would maybe be pissed off, but maybe the way he handles it is he just wants to come back, get on with it, and he'll just shrug it off and carry on. Will the England boys be especially down? How does it affect Nathan Ake? You know, did Holland expect to win it? Was going out in the quarterfinals about right? You know, will there be players who didn't win it? I know City don't have any Moroccan players, but Morocco is obviously a good example. They didn't win it, but they'll be coming home delighted with what they did. So just those kind of emotional factors are really interesting. And then, I mean, in terms of the fitness and stuff, they've got all the science. They've got those kind of things. The Liverpool game will help. You know, the England lads, obviously, like Ake, people like that, people who went out in the quarterfinals, that was 2 weeks ago now. They may start against Liverpool. They may come on in the second half. Then they've got another week for the Leeds game. And then, you know, when City start the season in August, they're normally not fit. They're normally not ready. Guardiola doesn't like to play friendlies. That was something Aguero said on one of his Twitch streams in the summer. I think he said he doesn't like to play friendlies just in case the players get injured. Like, it's almost like the more friendlies, the more dangerous it is. So they get the fitness as the season goes on, and that may lead to a few dodgy results early on in the season. And maybe the Leeds game, I'd still expect City to win it, but you don't know. Maybe the Leeds game will be the dodgy result, and then people might start panicking, as they do at the start of the season when they lost to Spurs last season, and then they start hitting their stride again. So, yeah, obviously it is like a second preseason, and the first few games will be like maybe like they are in August, where the team aren't quite there. But there's so many games. They come around so quickly. You know what it's like in football? It's like a week's gone by, 10 days have gone by, and you played four games, and everything's different. So it'll all fall into place quickly enough. And before you know it, we'll be in the 14th of January or whatever, with five games in after the World Cup, and everything's just rolling on. They've got enough good players to manage it, professional enough players to manage it. And I suppose the best way to overcome disappointment, which I guess most of the players will be feeling coming back, is probably disappointment, because, you know, they're all big players, all used to winning. They're all hoping to do something. And I know the England players, from speaking to Nadum, you know, they weren't there making up the numbers. But the best way is just to focus on what they went to Qatar to do, to go and play and win, to come back to their club and do that with their mates and go again.
Yeah. Nadum, just on Sam said there about friendlies and Guardiola being a bit nervous about injuries. What's the difference between a pre-season friendly and a competitive game when it comes to actually playing in them? Because like watching them, I can't stand watching pre-season friendlies. They just don't feel competitive enough for me. Is it possible to ever replicate the competition element?
To a certain extent, I think you can try and work on things, but most preseason games have a set purpose beforehand, whether it's somebody plays 30 minutes, 45, 60, 90 minutes, whether you want to try out a new formation, see somebody in a different position. So once that becomes the case, the result isn't like the final factor, because there'll be other things which maybe will be more important. And I think when you know that's the sort of sentiment coming from the management on the sideline, you know, you will play and you will take it seriously, but there are certain times where, say in a game, for example, you know, it's not something I necessarily condone, but it's definitely something that I did. You know, like you start to surround referees and stuff because you're really angry. Well, in a friendly, you won't necessarily get to that point.
Yeah.
So it means that you're not actually giving it 100%, like without even thinking about it. You know, you just perceive it in a different way and you will take it seriously. You'll try and get in the right spot. You'll be going up for headers, going in for tackles, you know, making the right runs and so on. But when it's all said and done, you know, you, most of the time when you ask, was it worth it? It tends to be not about the fact that you won 1-0 or lost 2-1. It's more so, well, this guy ran this distance or this guy made these movements. So I could see why he's probably not into it. And in fairness to him, if that was to be the case, they'll probably just replicate more stuff like that in training.
Yeah.
Because there is a, you know, it might not be the same to be playing 11 versus a team you don't know, but playing 11v11 at City, let's be honest, the players aren't too bad. So the game itself, I imagine if they did play one, the quality would be all right, I guess. You know what I mean? So, you know, I think he gets it. And as Sam was alluding to, you know, they might start a season slowly, but the way football goes these days, a slow season start might be a week where they're not at their absolute best. And thankfully at this point, you know, a bad week doesn't necessarily define your season as such, because lo and behold, come the end of it, you know, City tend to finish seasons pretty strong. And, you know, as a consequence, it's tough to sort of doubt what they're going for and what their beliefs are, because Pep himself and those players have been they've been okay for the last few years, I'd say.
Yeah, and of course, there's been, like as you Sam was saying before, there's been players who have been around the CFA and players who have obviously, you know, the breaks have come at different times. What's it like in training when a lot of the team have gone off on international duty, when there's not a full kind of complement there? All I'm thinking of is that Haaland video that City put out where he was basically doing everything around the CFA on his own. I mean, that's a bit extreme. It's not like that. What is it like?
Firstly, thanks for saying that I didn't have an international career.
That's
really
not
appreciate
what I
that.
Mean.
Let's
That's
put
not
that on record.
I mean.
Yeah, we're not going to cut that bit, are we? No, let's run that, yeah. Oh, yeah, you were around all the time when internationals went away. Yes, I was.
What was it like being shit?
Yeah, exactly. Listen, I played 21s if that counts. But anyway, let's crack on. It's different and it depends, like, there's different levels of, like, club in terms of how many people go away. City obviously have a lot of people that go away, you know, all the time. So it turns into a bit of a ghost town. And in my last sort of couple of years at City, that was the case. But you're left with what you're left with. And it's not like every player that is left is a disaster. You know, we're still Premier League players, David, believe it or not.
Yeah, listen, some of the
believe
best players have had to switch nationality to,
believe it
to,
or not,
in order to get international football. Look at Laporte.
Yeah, of course. I bet he wishes he was playing for France, though. But anyway, in regards to that, obviously I'm joking around. It's just different. It is just different. And you know the energy is not ever really going to be the same, but it doesn't mean that it's going to be bad. You're just going to make do with whatever you can in that time. You know, you'd want everybody to be there. You'd want training to be like really, really intense. But then also, I think because this moment was so different, like you're still going to work and you're watching a tournament, whereas usually, like when the tournaments are on, nobody's at work. So it's still nice to be able to have some sort of like sense of community with the people who are there as you're watching your teammates and other nations playing something, you know, like a big global spectacle. And then as things happen, you know, when you really think about it, were some of the players away for that long? Not really. Yeah. You know, some might have been away for, say, 2 weeks, 10 days. Like if we're talking 2 weeks, that's only maybe a few days more than a regular international break anyway. So given the fact that within that spell, you've probably had some time off as well, you're not really alone for that long. I think if everyone from City was in the like semis and the final and so on, then it'd be tougher. But, you know, people would have been coming back just one by one, and seeing those familiar faces would always bring us a boost. And like Gundogan, I think he's been back 2 weeks. He was back in England longer than I was. You know what I mean? I was there for 3 weeks and he was back sooner. So it's not always nice to have your captain back. So it's different, you know, but you accept it's part of the game. You'd want to be away with them. You'd want to be at the World Cup. You'd want to be doing well. You want to play every game at the World Cup, but you know that you can't necessarily do that. So you just take it for what it is. The club will try and make sure that, you know, psychologically they still keep you on board and you understand that, you know, it's not doom and gloom just because you're not there. And training will be good. It'll be fun. It won't be as deeply tactical as, say, it would be if everyone was there, but it'll still have some element of that. And, you know, you still want to go into work because, you know, what's the best thing to do after you see something on TV you like is go and try and do it yourself. So to go back onto the training field and go and have fun with some of your teammates, not all of them, then, you know, that's the main thing. So it's not the end of the world. And obviously, I had lots of years of experience of that, David. Thank you.
Hey, listen, mate. If we're classing you in the shit category, I dread to think what that does to me and Sam.
Hold on.
We've played together, mate. You're not getting away from it.
They're still different categories, though, but that's for another podcast.
I've got to put this out there as well, by the way. So I played in a media game over there against certain members of the BBC, of like, say, British football journalism and so on. Some people who have very infamous names, and I can confirm to you a lot of them are awful at football.
Yeah.
And I would say you two are a mile better than both of them. I'm just going to put that out there, yeah. Some of the ones who talk the most, they can't back it, not even 1%.
Sam?
Well, yeah, I'm not going to get into that. I prefer not to speak. I prefer not to play.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
We talked about the players coming back at different times. The England lads, they're mostly on holiday, I think, at the moment. Where do you think they'll be at for the return? Because you mentioned about Mahrez feeling disappointment. Obviously, England went out in the way that they went out. What would your thoughts be around the likes of Foden, Grealish?
Well, I mean, obviously, Grealish looks happy as Larry, doesn't he? And obviously, it differs, but I know we've seen the emotions. We've seen with all the players crying. We've seen with the late comebacks and the late goals and teams not all the kind of goalless games for a while and then going mad at the end. Because of all those emotions at a World Cup, and like Ronaldo crying and Neymar crying and all these things, it's because like the World Cup is kind of massive and probably the biggest tournament, and that's where the emotions are greater. But like, these players that we're talking about now, you know, have gone through that Champions League elimination, not Grealish obviously, but gone through that Champions League elimination against Spurs and then had to play Spurs like 3 days later and then won and then gone on to win the title. You know, the players we're talking about, and this does include Grealish, lost to Real Madrid in just shocking circumstances last season when they must have thought they were there. And, you know, heading into the last like 5 minutes in Madrid, they must have thought they were there. And then they had Newcastle, where the title was still on the line against Liverpool. Newcastle a few days later, then Wolves, then the West Ham game, and then Villa. And they did that. So if you're talking about how they're going to bounce back, you'd have to be confident, even though the World Cup obviously means so much. But you've seen these players come back from like the kind of depths of football in despair in terms of on-the-pitch stuff. And come back and put it right. And I mean, maybe some players go away with their national teams and think the style doesn't suit them or the football's not great. You know, I can imagine De Bruyne thinking that. I have no idea if that's true or not, but I can certainly imagine him thinking that.
I kind of feel like he would verbalise it, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But then all of a sudden you've got the opportunity to come back and you think, oh yeah, like everything is set up here for me to thrive. You know, I'm going to get this ball when I've got, well, enough time and space, maybe not loads of it, in the Premier League, but enough time and space to do it. I'm going to get it on my strongest foot. I'm going to have three passing options. It's going to be great. You know, they might be looking forward to getting back into that environment. And as much as anything else, it's like if you've ever had, any kind of disappointment or even grief. You know, for a lot of people, the best thing to do is just get back into whatever you were doing before, whether it's work or anything else. And look, this is, it's just football. It's just sport at the end of the day, and it is these guys' lives. But we have seen them bounce back, and I think the best way to do that is not to dwell on things, but to carry on. So if I was guessing, you can't generalize because it does change person to person, but we have seen how they've done it before, and I wouldn't be especially worried. And again, it's okay, City had more World Cup players than anyone else in the Premier League, and I think they had the second most in the world behind Barca, I think. But you know, other teams will have key players who will come back to support and all that. It's gonna affect a lot of clubs, and yeah, they'll react in their different ways. But like I say, give it like 2 weeks, there'll be loads of games in, and the World Cup will be a distant memory.
Yeah, and I just a quick word on Walker as well, because obviously he was injured going into the tournament, and he's obviously played a big part of England's tournament. Mm. That can only be good for him, I guess.
Yeah, well, I did see part of that documentary in the end. I missed a lot of like domestic stuff when the World Cup was on and being in Argentina. But they put out that documentary on, they must have, on the three England players and their kind of route to get fit for the World Cup. And obviously Walker, I remember being there for that Chelsea Carabao Cup game, and some of his teammates, because he was in like his own gear on the sidelines when everyone else was warming up, and he came out. And I remember Bernardo Silva like hugged him and looked at him as if to say, like, are you in, kind of thing. He like nodded. He was like, yeah, and I gave him a massive hug. And that was obviously massive for him, because he was maybe thinking, I'm not going to play at this tournament. And obviously Phillips had to have that surgery in that precise window where he could get the problem fixed so it wouldn't get worse. And then if it got worse, he'd miss the World Cup. But he had to have it knowing that he'd only just about be back. But obviously he couldn't get back into the team. And he ultimately did miss it because of injury, even though he was back. Walker was in a very similar boat because he, you know, an operation, I think it was a hernia. But he did come back in. And unlike maybe when he's come back from City, if we're thinking about the Madrid games last season, he kind of ended up getting rushed back, hurt himself again, and then missed more time. But he'll be obviously not delighted because of how England went out. But I think he'll be delighted personally that he was able to play so well. And then a bit more of a break, I guess, you know, because it's still been 2 weeks, maybe three by the time he starts another game. So he should have a nice little run down into the second half of the season. And let's not forget, you know, people were talking about him being finished and short of pace and this kind of stuff before he went away. So the way he come back in Qatar is very promising for him. And I think he, you know, he could show that these kind of takes are a bit, you know, very, well, not a bit, very premature sometimes.
Yeah, I was going to say, Nadim, for especially Walker, the talk ahead of that France game was all about Walker versus Mbappe. And I think it's really sad that England did go out in that game, because Walker was fantastic, and it kind of gets overlooked in the circumstances of the game. And I don't want to say it's frustrating for a player to kind of have that happen, but you can kind of see how he'd be a little bit annoyed by it all.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But then so would others, because, you know, for as good as Cal was in some of the 1v1 elements that he had, you know, I thought Jordan Henderson covered quite well over there as well, as did Declan Rice. So it was never really a case of he was on an island for, like, you know, the full 90 minutes. And it's just the nature of football. And it's always like, my advice, as I say to any youngsters, just be a forward. You know what I mean? Because you at some point you may get rewarded, whereas the defender, you're just looking at the clock wondering when you're going to get punished. You know, it doesn't matter how well you're playing for this part, because in a second everything might change. And yeah, it's good to see him out there. I think I was hearing that he maybe been a bit frustrated that he was just coming and he felt like a cheerleader for the World Cup for the first couple of games, but in the end he got in, he was the senior figure, he played well, and you know, the expectation was high, he worked hard to get to that point, worked hard to get the opportunity, and he didn't let himself nor his nation down. So yeah, fair play to him. And I'm sure that when he comes back between now and the end of the season, if he can stay fit and stay healthy, like, that's a big boost for City. Because at times, you know, it felt like, you know, John Stones can play there, but it's not Kyle Walker playing there.
Yeah.
You know, so, and people prefer Cancelo on the left. So now he has an opportunity to do so. Should they have good health between now and the end of the season, all that back line, you know, I think they can go back to being as exceptional as they say had been in times gone by. Because again, I forgot, like, Akanji had been playing there as well loosely. So it's good to have all the main people in the main positions back in play, because then the competition for places will be high, and as a consequence, the performances will be higher.
Yeah, definitely a difference between players that can play there and players that do play there, if that makes sense.
Sure.
We've talked about kind of coming back into the swing of things, Nadim. When I mentioned the idea of fatigue to you in the build-up to this, the phrase you used was, see if we can bust some myths about the worries that people might have. Everybody is really worried about fatigue and kind of how the players will be tired going into the next few weeks. As we've said a few times, they've probably played fewer games during the World Cup than they would have done in a normal season. But then again, in a normal season, they wouldn't have played as many games ahead of the World Cup as they had done. So is it going to make much of a difference, or will it all be very much of a muchness so far?
I think it's much of a muchness. And I think as well, when we start to talk about players in tiredness and World Cups, we're generalising on the assumption that everybody has played the same amount of games to this point, and everyone's playing week in, week out, and everyone's played 90 minutes and so on and so forth. Like, there are players who have done that to this point, but then they're the ones who finish seasons and play 60 games anyway. So they're probably in line with what their sort of traditional workload tends to be as it is. And from this tiredness standpoint, you know, this is the first year now, interestingly, as we've seen through discussions now, where people are being given time off in December. That's not a normal thing. So, you know, to be able to have a break halfway through a season, it does matter. And for those World Cup games, you know, Jack, for example, didn't play every minute of every game that happened there. So he was out there, it was warm weather, they were training, they weren't training during the height of the heat in the day. They'd be training later and they'd be managing the sort of workloads to make sure that the biggest thing that you are is ready for a game, as opposed to just going through a preseason trip, because that tends to be the sentiment when you go somewhere warm, outside of like a normal football window, is just to go there and be flogged, basically. But that's not the sentiment there. So this idea of tiredness, like, the players might say they're physically tired, but they're probably not as tired as they would have been if this World Cup would have been in the summer off the back of 50, 60 games. And then the mental tiredness could come from some of the disappointment. But then in the grand scheme of things, they weren't away for that long. And now it's just a case of, you know, the thing that'll probably make you the most miserable and affect you mentally is when you come back and it's really cold. But physically, I don't think that affects you because you're so used to it. You know, this, as I think Sam's made the point like 20 minutes ago, before you know it, it'll be January 14th and it'll be like the World Cup never happened. Because you'll be playing away somewhere, it's lashing it down with rain, the floodlights are on at like 3:30, and you're like, well, this is what it is, and this is what it always has been. And no matter how you feel, you know, if you do feel bad, surely everyone else feels bad as well, because this is just the nature of football. The teams that have the best players will play the most games, and those players, they get the chance to do so because they're sort of looked after by their football clubs and they look after themselves as well. So from a tiredness standpoint, I don't think it really matters that much. And to add to it, as you guys were saying before, people might be offered breaks, but some of them, they'll probably feel they don't need it. So they'll just want to get back in and start playing football because that's the thing that drives them more than anything. So to try and take it away from them by saying they're too tired, I think it misses the point. Get to the end of the season, because this is, throughout my career, post the November international break through to March time, the next international break was always perceived as the most important time, because this is the one whereby you would have no breaks and you'd have to be fully focused in on everything, where the games would kick in more, the weather gets tougher, the pitches get a bit worse, and everything is more on the line. So that still remains. So realistically, nothing's changed. It's just the fact that, you know, for some people, they went away for an extra week instead of the traditional 2 weeks you'd find for an international break. They went away for three. Or maybe they went away for 3.5, maybe they went away for 4. But if you went away for 4, you came back with something like Alvarez. And if you came back after 2, you came back with disappointment. But now you look at, say, the league table and know that the quest to get to the top begins now, and you're feeling fresh enough psychologically and physically to be able to go out there and get it done like you have done in the past, because that's what you hope and expect from yourself and those around you.
Yeah, it's weird because I know being a footballer is not a normal job. But Sam, you must have done it. I've done it, where you turn up to work and you've had a couple of days where you've not had the right sleep, and you're just like, you're mentally shattered, and you can't really focus on what it is that you're doing. And I'm just wondering, kind of like on days like that, sometimes a change is really good. And I'm just wondering, Nadim, when you have those sorts of, the fact that they've had this something that is different in the middle of the season, you kind of come back to it and you are actually refreshed rather than tired. And it's a strange thing. You've done a lot more work than you would have done normally, or maybe you're still at the same level, but because it's just something that's different, it's a huge change to go from you know, a few weeks of international duty and back to domestic action, that actually it might be quite easy to slip back into the season and kind of hit the ground running.
You know, that's always a tough one because you never know how the game's going to go, what the opposition's going to be like. Like, you know, you could get a red card within 5 minutes and then things, you're under pressure and so on and so forth. But when the season does restart, there'll be lots of players who are desperate to get it going again. Those that both went to the World Cup and those that didn't. But in terms of, say, people coming back from the World Cup when they did, you know, they'll be coming back and all their peers who didn't go will be asking 1,000 questions. You know, there's something to sort of unite you all, even if you weren't necessarily all there. Maybe they all watched the final together. Maybe they didn't because some of them hate Argentina. Who knows? You know, maybe some people were rooting for it. Maybe turned on when Mbappe scored too because they thought France are going to win it and so on. But it is different. And I think within football, because it's such a conservative sport by nature, a lot of people don't like change. But from when the change happens and you sort of take it in for what it is, most of the time, like, it's fine, if not good. So I like to have these talking points now because respectfully, and I mean this in a respectful manner, yesterday I was on the radio and I was talking about Messi and the World Cup and everything else. But in the background, it was Sheffield United, I think, against Wigan. And it was cold and the pitch was extra bobbly. I was like, flipping heck. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is it. So maybe you want to hold on to the memories of the World Cup just that little bit more because it was a good time for a lot of people, even if the result didn't go the way that they wanted. But I'm sure some of those guys who were playing in that game would have happily been away in Doha for 3-4 weeks playing for the national side with a chance to try and win it all because, you know, they're doing fine, doing a great job. And also, I think where I would have struggled is if, say, you someone like Alvarez, he came from playing in the final 2 days ago to then playing in the League Cup game 3 days later. You know, that would be the problem. But instead, you've been allowed the time to either enjoy or get over everything that came before. And then when you arrive back in, it's like, yeah, this is familiar. This is what we want. You're being welcomed back with like arms wide open. And people want to know how you did. What was your experience like? And now let's get ready for the run in because it's going to be a tough one, not just for City, but for everyone.
Yeah. Just a final question on the kind of tiredness angle of it all. Did you ever have to say to a manager, listen, I am absolutely knackered. I'm not sure I can do it today. Like how kind of impactful is fatigue, like mentally and physically?
It depends. I think it's been well documented now that like Kevin De Bruyne was really struggling at the start of last season. And I think he probably had conversations about that. And you could see from his play that he wasn't the same. And I think they probably knew that they needed to make a change within him at some point. But it's like, it's December, you know what I mean? Like, it'd be very weird if I heard someone come halfway through a season and say, yeah, I'm tired. This is just a bit too much. Because these players, like Lionel Messi, for example, and obviously I know he's like one of one or one of two or whatever. Like, he's played 1,000 games. Do you think he arrived there by coming in December and saying he's a bit tired? Like, the people that are at the very top, like, they love playing football. They love winning. And they love being out there. And they're able to get to those 1,000 games because they really look after themselves. So they almost accept a level of tiredness that will exist, but they'll do everything they can to try and stop it from being a limiting factor. Like, they will just want to go out and win. When you're playing football, when you're playing well, and when your team's winning, it's literally, for me, the greatest job in the world. And I think there's obviously a level of bias within that, but it's an incredible feeling. So why you would choose to maybe affect that by saying, I don't want to play, I don't want to feel the feeling of playing well, I don't want to see the feeling of winning, you know, that's not in the nature of these players. I think it'd be easy for some to cut corners, but for these, they accept that, you know, difficulty within football, physically, mentally, emotionally, and so on, exists for everyone and not just themselves. Yet still, you try and find a way to do it because you want to be part of the movement. Because you never know as well for these guys. If you don't play Saturday, for you know, that might mean in 3-4 months' time, you won't be playing in semi-final of a Champions League or something.
Yeah.
Or you might not be playing in a final. Like, there's nothing better than essentially seeing your name on that team sheet to start a game. Because at that point there, whether it's right or wrong, you'll feel like it's more in your control as to whether you will maintain your position within that side because you're out there. But then picture the scene of somebody sitting on the sideline hoping that they perhaps get the chance to be out there again because you never know. You literally never know. So why not try and just do everything you can to be out there starting? Because, as I say, even though you play for the same team, it does feel different to be on the field versus on the sideline after 3 points has been won.
Yeah. Now, Sam, it's Liverpool up next on Thursday. Yeah, it's all of a sudden it's here. I mean, as Nadim says, I would be very surprised if Alvarez was in the team, for instance. but the way I can see it at the moment, it's going to look like Kevin De Bruyne, Erling Haaland, Ilkay Gundogan, Riyad Mahrez, and the rest. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I didn't pay much attention to that friendly at the weekend because, as kind of Nadim alluded to earlier, it's just. That's just for fitness, isn't it? Like there was nobody had any business watching that game. It just doesn't matter, does it? Like from a media point of view, like, there's nothing to be read into it. From a fitness point of view, very important. But it was a kind of mad starting 11, wasn't it? Was there only two players who had been to the World Cup, and that was De Bruyne and Gundogan. But obviously, you've got Mahrez and Haaland who didn't go, so that strengthens it a bit. Yeah, I don't know. Again, it'll be individual, won't it? If there's anybody back, you know, the Spanish lads, will they be back a bit sooner? Add to that. Liverpool, they'll have a few more players, obviously, because they didn't have so many who went to the World Cup, and they didn't have so many who went that deep into the World Cup either. It's a good opportunity. Like, it's a good run-in for the other competitions, but it's a good run-in for the Premier League, isn't it? We said this before the draw that, you know, I'm sure that Guardiola would be very happy if City drew, you know, United or Liverpool, like a big game in the Carabao Cup, because it's the biggest opponent you can get domestically, but not in the most important game, but more than a friendly. So it's that kind of perfect balance. So like if City go out, it's not the end of the world. You don't want to lose to Liverpool. But if you've got a warm-up game for hitting the ground running against Leeds and getting 3 points in the Premier League, then I don't know. It's almost like the greater good. So yeah, whoever they can get back, I don't know if some other players will be back yet. I've not really attuned back into the City way of thinking yet after the World Cup. I'm still working on some different things. Got another one, Mario column coming up, which might excite some people working on that today. But yeah, it'll be what it'll be. And we've mentioned this mythical date of January the 14th, which I plucked out of thin air earlier on. It's the Manchester Derby. Manchester Derby at Old Trafford at 12:30. Yeah, I checked. I wonder how many games will have actually passed by then. But yeah, it's the Manchester Derby at 12:30. Having played Chelsea twice in the two games before that and then Spurs afterwards. So yeah, like, again, by then it won't really matter. And if City are out of the Carabao Cup at the hands of Liverpool, it'll be a bit of a stinger at the time and whatever comes with that. But, you know, it's like that. Well, whenever City have played strong teams in games where you don't expect them to, but for like fitness purposes, and then they'll go and play Wolves and Leeds like they did last Christmas, and but they've been in shape to beat them. They got 6 points from two difficult Premier League games. It's like, yeah, we'll take this big game now. We'll get up for it. There'll be a big crowd. No one's going to turn up. You know, we talked about earlier, he'd take some games for granted. City fans aren't going to turn up and take this game for granted. It's going to have all that kind of big match tension without actually being that important. It's perfect in the circumstances.
Yeah, and obviously, looking at the league table, Sam, 5 points behind Arsenal after that defeat to Brentford, which is, it feels like a long time ago now in a good way. I think it's important to remember that there is still a very long way to go. It's still like we keep talking about the halfway point of the season. We've actually got about 2/3 of the season to go. So it's very easy to kind of get ahead of yourselves and start thinking about how the gap is to Arsenal. But 5 points at this stage of the season is nothing.
No, it isn't. But people know this anyway, because, you know, if City fans have been 5 points clear, City fans have seen their team at 5 points clear towards the end of the season, you still never really take anything for granted. And obviously, you know, there have been bigger leads that City have overcome. And yeah, like, I wouldn't be worried even if the gap was bigger. You know, maybe the gap is going to be bigger by the end of the Boxing Day fixtures. And maybe if Arsenal win and then City don't get the result with Leeds for the reasons we've mentioned earlier, the gap will be bigger. But like we've already said as well, this is effectively, it's possible that City start this second part of the season slowly and then they'll pick up. So yeah, not too much more to elaborate on that. It's just not a big concern for me personally.
Yeah, Nathan, will that Brentford defeat still be in the back of the mind and thinking about going and putting it right, or will too much have happened since then?
Oh my goodness, when was that Brentford defeat? I don't remember it myself.
Funnily enough, I got to figure it was on your birthday.
Yeah, it was actually, yeah, so I do remember it. Thanks for that. those guys, like, I think they see the table and they see the future. I think that trying to sort of think about something that happened over a month ago when, like, a World Cup's happened and, like, I think it misses the point. I think they'll probably rectify and watch back that game whenever they're going to play Brentford again, final day of the season. But, no, that is done. What's done is done. You can't go back. You can't change things. So you just try and prepare for the next game because the next opponent is different. It's always going to be different, apart from, obviously, when you play Chelsea twice in a week. But, yeah, it is different. They'll be over it. They understand, like, unfortunately, you will lose some games. You will drop some points. You won't necessarily play well every single week. But the focus is just trying to win everything that they can between now and the end of the season, I imagine, and just getting out there, getting in the rhythm and get back to being as dominant as they have been in years gone by.
Yeah, and for anybody listening, if anybody's just wondering, why on earth do you know Nader Manua's birthday? It's because it's the day before mine. So that's just why it's stuck in my head. Yeah. Right, well, that brings us to an end of this week's Why Wizzles. Thank you, as ever, to Sam Lee.
Yeah, wasn't Nader's anniversary on the Villa game?
I don't know, actually.
Yeah, guys, relax, please. Next thing you'll be doxing me on Earth. Please, just leave it be.
This is a bit mad, isn't it? But I just thought it'd be funny. I mean, look, obviously we were around that Villa game, so I thought I deliberated for a second. I thought I'd throw it in. I have thrown it in. Cheers, so mate. See you next week.
Yeah, we'll find out what I'll leave in the edit when we come to listen back to it in a few hours, won't we?
Well, you won't have me saying bye otherwise, so unless you cut it from like in a previous show. So this is it. This is the only way it's going out.
It's happening. Yeah, lovely. And thanks very much to Nader Manua.
Cheers, thank you.
If anybody's interested in where Nadim lives, then get in touch. We can find that out for you. I'm just joking. Don't forget, you can sign up to The Athletic right now for £1 a month for 6 months. Just use the code MANCITYPOD.
The Athletic.